This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
The night sky for January 2014. Well, of course, we have a lovely evening sky. Over to the west, Pegasus and Andromeda are setting, and I give some instructions on the night sky page as to how to find Andromeda, and also, perhaps if the night is very dark and there's no moon, the other galaxy in that region called M33 in Triangulum. The centrepiece, of course, in the south is Orion the Hunter, with its bright stars Betelgeuse to the upper left, one of the largest stars we know of, and actually imaged recently by E. Merlin at Jodrell Bank. And down to the lower right, of course, is Rigel. Below the center of the three stars lies the Sword of Orion, which includes that beautiful object, the Orion Nebulae, visible perhaps as a hazy spot with an unaided eye, but with binoculars or a small telescope, it can look absolutely lovely. The three stars of Orion's belt act as pointers. Down to the lower left, you come to Sirius, the brightest star in our northern hemisphere, Alpha Canis Majoris. Sadly, the lower part of Canis Major we tend not to see from our northern latitudes, certainly up here in Manchester. If you take the three stars up to the right, you come to the constellation of Taurus, the Bull, with the two lovely clusters, the Hyades cluster first, and then the little Pleiades cluster. It's one of the most beautiful objects to look at with a pair of binoculars. A bright star, Aldebaran, lies in the direction of the Hyades cluster, but actually only about halfway towards it. It's a red giant. Because our eyes aren't terribly sensitive in the red, we tend to see red giants as an orange colour. Up to the left of Orion, of course, is Gemini, and that's where this month we're going to find Jupiter. High up above Orion, we have Auriga with the bright yellow star Capella. And over to its right, still high in the sky, we have Perseus and then Cassiopeia. And perhaps you remember that halfway between Perseus and Cassiopeia, along the plain of the Milky Way, lies that lovely region containing the Perseus double cluster. As the evening moves on, Leo is rising over in the east, and below to its left, Mars and then Saturn will be rising in the early hours of the morning. So lots to look at in this lovely sky that we have in January. Well, what about the planets? We'll start with Jupiter. It's visible all night long this month and dominates the southeastern sky in the evening. It reaches opposition on the 5th of January, which means, of course, it'll be due south around midnight and will actually be at a lovely elevation of about 62 degrees above the horizon, shining at magnitude -2.7 and having a disk 47 arc seconds across. It really never gets better than that. It's lying in the constellation Gemini, high in the ecliptic, and it's moving westwards in retrograde motion, due in fact to the fact the Earth is sort of going around on the inside track. And it's moving away from the star Wasat, called Delta Geminorum. And of course, with a small telescope, you can observe the four Galilean moons as they weave their way around it, and should also be able to pick up the great red spot visible as an indentation in the south equatorial belt. What about Saturn? Saturn is now visible in the pre-dawn sky, rising at about 3 a.m. on New Year's Day and at about 1:30 a.m. at month's end. Lying in Libra, it is shining with a magnitude of +0.6, having a disk with a diameter of about 16 arc seconds. The really good news is that the rings have now opened out to about 20 degrees from the line of sight, so presenting a magnificent view. Sadly, for those of us in the northern hemisphere, it's now lying in the more southerly part of the ecliptic, so even at opposition, its elevation will not get that high. Even worse, this will not improve for many years to come. Mars. Well, Mars, lying in Virgo, rises around midnight at the start of the month and about 1 hour earlier at the end. Its magnitude increases somewhat from +0.9 to +0.3, whilst the angular size increases from 6.9 to 8.8 arc seconds. So, given good seeing, it's possible to see markings on its salmon pink surface, such as the polar caps and Syrtis Major. So I think we can say that Mars's current apparition is really on its way. Mars is moving down across Virgo. At the beginning of the month, it's just below Purima, Gamma Virginis, whilst at its end, it's just 4.5 degrees to the upper right of Spica, Alpha Virginis. Well, Mercury. Mercury passed behind the Sun, that's called Superior Conjunction, on December the 29th, so will not be visible, but then low in the west-southwest from about the mid to late part of January. It reaches its greatest elongation, that is, its furthest away from the Sun in angle, and that's 18 degrees on January the 31st. It will then lie about 10 degrees above the horizon, 45 minutes after sunset, lying near a slender crescent moon. The magnitude will be then minus 0.6, and will have an angular size of 7 arc seconds. Well, finally, Venus. Venus will pass between the Earth and the Sun on the 11th of January, so it will only be seen either at the very beginning of the month, low in the southwestern sky after sunset, or at month's end, low above the eastern horizon before dawn. On New Year's Day, just 3% of its disk will be illuminated, but the very slim crescent will span almost 1 arc minute across. So what about the highlights this month? Well, I've sort of covered some of them. With Jupiter at opposition on January the 5th, it's the best month possible to observe Jupiter. The angular size remains at about 6 arc seconds throughout the month, so there's lots of details to see. And look, if you don't have a small telescope now, surely Father Christmas can bring you one so you can have a look. Probably the best year for many to come that we'll have to see Jupiter so high in the sky. The red spot, I saw that in a photograph image just the other night, it's actually become more prominent and can be easily seen now as a large feature in the South Equatorial Belt. And again, on the night sky page, I've just annotated a picture I took last year showing you the various parts of the surface that you see, the equatorial belts and the zones. What about Venus? Well, as I said, we see it at the very beginning or at the end of the month. On January the 2nd, if it's clear, and I hope it will be after sunset, it will be visible about 45 minutes after sunset, and given a good low southwest horizon, you should be able to observe it just below a very thin crescent moon. And it's actually very rare that one could see two very thin crescents at the same time. Another thing to look for is the Earth shine on the moon, the sort of the unlit side of the moon, but illuminated faintly by the light reflected by clouds on the Earth. It's not still a bad month to see Andromeda. And again, on the night sky page, I've given you details as to how to do that and also to find M33. And that would be easiest at around the 1st, the beginning of the month, and the very end, because in fact we have two new moons this month. And obviously, the less light there is in the sky, the easier it is to see. Certainly M33, which is really pretty faint. On January the 14th, Jupiter is actually quite close, about 6 degrees, from a 98.4% full moon. That's pretty full, isn't it? Again, I show on the night sky page a picture I took of the two together when they came even closer in 2012. And I'm afraid to keep the size reasonable, I've actually pushed Jupiter a little bit closer to the moon than it really was. But anyway, that's something you can have a look on the website. And coming to the end of the month, on Jan the 25th, before dawn, Saturn will be close to a waning, roughly third quarter moon. So that's a nice thing to see. Just to the right of Saturn will be the moon. And finally, on January the 29th, before dawn, Venus, as I said, appears again, and this time with a thin crescent moon. Venus will be just 4 degrees above a very slender, waning crescent moon. So quite a lot to look for this month. Jupiter is no doubt the star. I do hope you get some really good, clear nights.
Thanks for that, Ian. And now for everyone in the Southern Hemisphere, here's John Field telling us about what you can see in the Southern Hemisphere night sky in January.
Kia ora and welcome to the first Jodcast of 2014. With our long daylight hours, the stargazing opportunities are much shorter, but this is offset by warmer nights. After sunset, the sky in the north is dominated by the constellations of Orion, Canis Major and Taurus, along with the planet Jupiter. Appearing as a bright white star, Jupiter is moving in a retrograde or backwards motion in front of the distant stars that form the constellation of Gemini, the twins. The brightest stars in Gemini are Castor and Pollux. These mark the heads of the twins, and they can be found low in the northeast after sunset. Castor, shining at magnitude 1.6, is the lower of the two stars and is a multiple star system. The two brightest companions can be split in medium-sized telescopes. Although with the title of Alpha, it is not in fact the brightest star in the constellation. Beta, commonly called Pollux, is the brighter, shining at magnitude 1.1. It is about 35 light-years away from us, and although similar in mass to Sirius, it is a much brighter star, with a luminosity of 43 times that of our Sun, compared to Sirius's 26. This star has used up the hydrogen in its core and has now evolved into a giant star. Its colour has also changed. As the surface area expanded, its temperature dropped, giving it an orange hue compared to Sirius's white. In 2005, a planet with 2.5 times the mass of Jupiter was discovered orbiting this star. Nearby to Eta, marking the foot closest to Taurus, is M35, an open star cluster that under good conditions can be seen with the unaided eye. Binoculars reveal more detail, and wide-field telescopes provide the best views. This cluster of over 500 stars is about 2,800 light-years away and is about 100 million years old. A number of our summer's zodiac constellations can be found to the left of Gemini. Due north after sunset is Taurus the Bull. In Greek mythology, this constellation is seen as the embodiment of the god Zeus. The bull's head appears as a distinct upside-down V of stars with its two horn tips stretching down towards our horizon. Aldebaran marks one of his eyes and is a red giant star about 65 light-years away. The Pleiades mark the bull's back and can be found to the west of his head. A cluster of at least 7 stars is visible to the eye. Once again, binoculars or a wide-field telescope with low magnification is the best way to view this open cluster. I was recently camping with friends and showed this cluster through 10x50 binoculars, and they were amazed to see how many stars there were and what a beautiful sight they make. Sitting above and between Taurus and Gemini is Orion the Hunter. This constellation has a large number of bright stars and many sights for the unaided eye, as well as binoculars and telescopes. This group of stars dominates our summer evening sky, and us southern hemisphere observers hangs upside down and is commonly known as the Pot to many New Zealanders. Orion's brightest stars, Rigel, Betelgeuse and Bellatrix, along with a line of three stars forming its belt, are an easily seen pattern in our sky. Well placed for viewing is the Orion Nebula, which can be found in the middle of Orion's sword. To the unaided eye, this nebula appears as a fuzzy star. If you have binoculars or a small telescope, they will reveal a bat-shaped cloud. A 100mm or greater telescope reveal a number of stars in and around the nebula, including a tight group of four stars called the trapezium. The ultraviolet radiation from the brightest star in the trapezium is illuminating the surrounding cloud for a region of about 20 light-years. The nebula is estimated to be about 1,300 light-years away. Marking Orion's left foot is Rigel, the brightest star in Orion, although it is listed as Beta, the second brightest star in the constellation. This star is about 860 light-years away from us, 18 times more massive and 130,000 times more luminous than our Sun. The Sun Māori along the east coast of Aotearoa, New Zealand, the Pleiades, the V of Taurus's head, and the belt and sword of Orion form a great waka, the Māori word for canoe, known as Te Waka o Tamariri, the canoe of Tamariri. In Māori mythology, Tamariri sailed across the night sky in a canoe, placing the stars into the heavens. The wake of the canoe forms the pale glow of the Milky Way on which the waka sits. Following Orion are his two hunting companions, Canis Major the Large and Canis Minor the Small Dog. The brightest star in our night sky, Sirius, marks the collar of Canis Major. For us, the dog is lying on his back with his feet up in the air. Sirius is 8.7 light-years away and about 26 times brighter than our Sun. Below Canis Major is Canis Minor, with Procyon, the eighth brightest star in the night sky, marking his tail. Almost overhead in the early evening sky is the second brightest star in our sky, Canopus. Measurements from the Hipparchus spacecraft put this star as being 310 light-years away. This star has an estimated luminosity of 15,000 times that of our Sun. Mars can be found near the star Spica in Virgo, rising after midnight, and is followed by Saturn rising at 2 a.m. Venus and Mercury are too close to the Sun to be visible during January. We wish you clear skies during these summer nights and hope you take the opportunity to view some of the delights of our southern skies.